Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Live from UW Green Bay, this is a special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio as we preview this weekend's LZ Lambeau Welcome Home Reunion for Vietnam veterans.
Has come, and the land is dark, and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. So, darling.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we'll look back at that war, the turbulent times in which it was fought, and the guts and courage of those who served on the front lines in Southeast Asia. The LZ Lambeau event is a long-delayed tribute to these vets and is expected to bring many thousands of people to historic Lambeau Field Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Among those scheduled to speak or perform, Governor Jim Doyle, Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame quarterback Bart Starr, and the man you're listening to now, R&B legend Ben E. King. Now, this is indeed an opportunity to stand by the men and women who served in Vietnam. As we speak, there's a dedication ceremony taking place at the Moving Wall as a caravan of motorcycle riders prepares to leave from La Crosse for a cross-state trip. The ceremony Saturday night includes music, aerial flybys, presentations, and a special memorial to the 1,244 people from Wisconsin who were killed in Vietnam or are still missing in action. Our guest for the next hour, LZ Lambeau organizer John Miskowski, a Stevens Point native who is the director of development at Wisconsin Public Television. We also have in our Green Bay studios two Vietnam vets, Thomas Schober, who was drafted in the fall of 1968 while attending UW-Madison Law School. He served as a buck sergeant with the 198th Light Infantry Brigade, and his story in Vietnam was also the subject of a book and a made-for-TV movie called Friendly Fire. Also joining us, Charlie Lieb of the 101st Airborne Division, 2nd Battalion, 506th Infantry, a West Point graduate with three Purple Hearts, who was engaged in one of the most harrowing battles of the Vietnam War at Fire Base Ripcord. Now, we want you to be a part of the next hour of programming, especially if you're listening to this show for the first time on the Green Bay cluster of stations, WHID 88.1 FM, WHDI 91.9 FM Sister Bay, and WRST 90.3 FM Oshkosh. If you're a Vietnam veteran, if you know one, if you remember the times in which they served, if you'd like to share a remembrance, a story, a tribute, or a memorial to a loved one, our lines are open to you, and we'll try to get to as many phone calls as we can. So please call us from wherever you're listening, toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. John, Tom, and Charlie, thanks so much for being with us today. And, John, we'll start with you. What inspired you and the other organizers of this event to do it?
Well, I think, first of all, it was the is a project that started with conversations with Vietnam vets, as we had produced a documentary film about World War II, followed by a similar project with Korea. And we sat down with vets in groups of 8 or 10 and talked to them, heard their stories, many of them telling their stories for the first time. And I think the power of those stories, the power of those emotions and memories, really felt like this was something that really could be built on, and really an effort to reach the entire state and engage them in that storytelling.
How long have you been at it?
Well, it feels like in 2001 we started our World War II project, and I think about the first day someone asked us when we were going to do Vietnam. So in some ways it's gone on since then, but probably just something around 3 years that started with conversations with Vietnam vets.
The response and outpouring of support has been pretty impressive, hasn't it?
It is truly amazing. People making contributions, people volunteering. With folks who come down to Lambeau, there's projects. The librarians across the state gathered the obituaries and death notices from the 1,244 KIA, just a project that they were so taken with this that they really wanted to be part of it and really help share the story and show that there are real people behind these names on the wall.
If you had to name, John, just five or six things that are going on this weekend, what are the most important parts of the event? I know that's a tough question for you.
Well, I think the number one thing is that vets will be talking. They'll be there. They'll be talking with their family and with the folks that they've served with. There's activities going on, but I think we've been really conscious of that's the first thing that's important because so many of the Vietnam vets served. They came home. They put that service away. There was a stigma attached to being a Vietnam vet, and they didn't share their stories, and people in their community didn't even know that they were Vietnam vets. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the tribute event on Saturday night in the stadium. Tickets are available for that. That's going to be an extraordinary evening, and I want to have folks understand that this is an event not only for Vietnam vets and their families, but also for the public. You know, there's no welcome home, there's no thank you without the public being there. We've been heartened at the kind of response, but folks are sort of hearing about it and interested. We really encourage them to come out, shake the vet's hand, listen to their stories, walk around, see these extraordinary exhibits.
Well, Lambeau Field's a big place, so there are plenty of seats available.
Yeah, there are seats available. We had a great turnout so far, but there's still seats. So in addition to that, throughout the grounds, all free, there's a motor pool with the vehicle exhibits. There's a museum exhibits in the atrium. There's a big map. It's a crazy idea. The idea was if we had a big map on the ground, Vietnam vets could take their families and show where they served. And when they got there, I think they'll find someone who served there too, and they'll be able to share each other's stories. There's lots happening. I think I should also mention that the moving wall will be there.
We've got a dedication ceremony going on right now, as a matter of fact. It made it difficult for us to get veterans to be on this program because so many wanted to be at the memorial.
Yes, and I just left it. It was just packed. I walked up to the wall with a man from Ocano, who lost his son in Vietnam. And it's just a reminder. Everything about this is how intensely personal this has touched so many families in the state.
And speaking of stories, National Story Corps, the project, is going to be here recording some of these stories.
Well, I think one of the really wonderful things about all those projects that I mentioned, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, is we have those interviews forever now. We have, through our partnership with the Wisconsin Historical Society, the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, and Wisconsin Public Television, have well over 200... This is a great event for
for instance, it would be to address your question about recruiting. Well, we did have recruiters ask to participate in that. We denied this request because we did not think that's not what this event is about. But I think as people go through the event, first of all, the answer for everybody is simply to come down and attend. I can say one thing, someone else can say something else, but I think people will go there. I think what they'll find is that they'll see that this is genuine activities and programs that have been put together and formed. By Vietnam vets about things that are meaningful to them. But the issue of the tone of it, in our music, because we did visit some veterans events, and one of the things that was most important that we saw was vets coming together, laughing, sharing their stories. So there's this variety, and we really try to engage vets and be involved in planning it. And Tom and Charlie, just talking about the protests that greeted you when you came home. It's 40 years later, and the protests are continuing, at least on this scale. How do you respond to these good feelings for peace and the problems that they have with the event this weekend? I don't really think they should have any problems with that, man. First of all, any time you see the moving wall, I've been to Washington, D.C. probably 6 times, and visited the wall there. It's a very somber occasion every time you go. I have many friends, several classmates of mine that died in Vietnam. Their names are on the wall. That's very quieting, very thought-provoking. It's not a family remembrance. But what I think is good about this event is it gives the opportunity many Vietnam veterans.
Never talked about the Vietnam War to their families or to other people. They've always kept it inside. They'll get an opportunity now to meet with other veterans in a kind of a neutral place and to talk about what happened 40 years ago. And I think that'll be very good for many of the Vietnam veterans.
I think so, too. I hope that some of these people will come and not just stay away. And I think they would be greeted with open arms.
Guys, the war was tough for a lot of people who fought in it and also for their friends and family at home. How tough was it for the two of you? Tom, you were drafted 1968. You were attending UW law school, and suddenly you find yourself in Vietnam?
Well, yeah, it was a real shock. I used to send home two sets of letters. I sent one to my mother, and I'd talk about the sunsets in the South China Sea and things like that. And I'd send another set home to my dad at his office so that he'd find out what we were really doing, and because I didn't want him caught by surprise. And my mother, I figured there was no sense in burdening her with the reality of what was going on every day. So it worked out pretty well. I don't think my mother ever knew what we really did, and that's just as well.
And Charlie, you weren't drafted. You were at West Point, but as you were telling me before the show, you started there in 1964. You certainly didn't expect what happened to happen back then.
No, but as you were there, you could see it developing in the Gulf of Tonkin, the commitment of additional forces, and you knew that you were going to go and... a lot of people that graduate from West Point chose the infantry branch like I did. And while I didn't volunteer to go to Vietnam, I got there a month after all my classmates that did volunteer to go there. I think what was tough for me is that I had gotten married after I graduated, so I had to leave my wife in the States for a year while I was gone, and that's always difficult. Luckily, I didn't have any children at the time, but that makes it more difficult when you're gone.
Charlie Lieb and Tom Schober, Vietnam vets. John Muskowski of Wisconsin Public Television, one of the organizers for the LZ Lambeau event that's taking place this weekend at historic Lambeau Field. We'll be back with more. You are listening to a special broadcast of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, live from our Wisconsin Public Radio studio at UW-Green Bay. Again, we'd like you to join us, 1-800-780-9742, if you'd like to say something in memory of or to a Vietnam veteran that meant something to you, or if you're a vet and you'd like to share your story. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
That phone number again, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to share a tribute, a memory, a story about a Vietnam veteran who meant something to you, or if you're a Vietnam vet and you've got a story to share with us. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is a special edition of Route 51, previewing the LZ Lambeau Welcome Home event taking place this weekend. And our guests, John Muskowski, Tom Schober, and Charlie Lieb. Charlie, you fought in one of the most harrowing battles during the Vietnam War, and I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about that, Operation Firebase Ripcord.
Yeah, Firebase Ripcord was established in March of 1970, but it actually took almost until late April before we made three attempts to get in and put in a firebase on the edge of the Ashaw Valley. Finally, in a third attempt, we were successful. We constructed a very good firebase there, brought in two batteries of artillery, and 155 and 105s, and then we had a battalion, and at times we had up to two battalions operating in the area of operations there. What made it a significant battle was that we were the only unit that was along the Ashaw Valley that was interdicting the supply routes of the North Vietnamese Army. And the North Vietnamese committed four divisions to open up and take over Fire Support Base Ripcord. For 75 days, we had incoming fire every day on the fire base. We lost lots of good people.
Friends of yours?
Friends of mine, three of my classmates. It was a very dicey situation, I guess. One of the things that happened was the North Vietnamese shot down a Chinook helicopter that was bringing in ammunition, crashed on the ammo dump and burned, and so all the rounds lit off and burned off a significant part of the firebase. They had good intelligence. They committed a lot of resources, And every day there were firefights, incoming rounds, and it was very interesting.
You got one of your Purple Hearts there.
Yes, I did. I was hit by an incoming recoilless rifle round, which you had to be pretty close to get one of those. It exploded right next to the tactical operations center and on the way into the mess hall, and killed three people, and I was probably, I think there were probably four of us that were wounded.
The battle lasted, what, 75 days?
We moved in there at probably the middle of April, and the fire base was evacuated, I believe, on the 19th of July. So from we started trying to go to like the 20th of March. So from the 20th of March to the 19th of July, there was activity in the area. We didn't really establish the fire base until the end of April. But from the 1st of June, every day thereafter, we did take incoming fire. And our units operating in the field were in constant.
And you ended up having to evacuate the base.
Yes, we did.
During that general period of time, we had the Tet Offensive. We had
Tet Offensive had been a year before. Caisson had been before. The reason probably not very many people heard about Fire Support Base Ripcord was the same time that the U.S. moved into Cambodia. So that got most of the news headlines, and the 101st tried to keep Ripcord under wraps.
But with all of these fatalities, with all of these casualties that we were getting in the Tet Offensive, both of you guys must have known that things weren't going right at the time. How do you keep your morale up in a situation like that? Tom?
Well, the Tet Offensive occurred before either of us got there. That was in 1968. Yeah. When things are bad, there isn't really much you can do because you're about 12,000 miles away from home and there's no one to complain to. So you just tough it out. And I think when you're young, you're able to do that a little easier than we might be able to now. I know that some people would crack under fire. Some people would dive into foxholes. People that you didn't expect to would crack. And then other people afterward would shed a lot of tears. You know, they'd have an emotional release after a firefight.
You guys have managed to keep it together, both of you.
Well, I guess. I spent a year in the hospital in 1982.
Right. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're talking to, we've got two Vietnam vets here, Tom Schober and Charlie Lieb, and also John Miskowski, who's one of the organizers of the LZ Lambeau event, the Welcome Home for Veterans event going on this weekend at Lambeau Field, 1-800-780-9742. And we'll be back after this.
APR comes from Thrive, a nonprofit economic development enterprise and a partner in something special from Wisconsin, featuring a variety of Wisconsin-based products, including Hidden Valley Mushroom Farm. Info at somethingspecialfromwisconsin.com.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret.
Silver wing. Talk radio and a special live broadcast from our studios at UW Green Bay as we preview this weekend's LZ Lambeau Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Reunion and look back at the war, the turbulent times in which it was fought, and talk about the men and women who served there. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests, LZ Lambeau organizer John Miskowski and Vietnam veterans Sergeant Tom Schober and also Charlie Lieb. Now, we particularly want to hear from you if you served in Vietnam. If you know somebody who did, if you have a story, a memory, or a tribute to share with us, please give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Gentlemen, that clip that we were just listening to, The Ballad of the Green Beret by Sergeant Barry Sadler, that came out in the early 60s. I think it was 1964. And the image we had of that war was far different from the one we had by the time it finally wrapped up in popular culture.
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. Tom, we were talking before the program started with Charlie Leib about some of his experiences. A lot of people are familiar with the book Friendly Fire, which was later made into a made-for-television movie starring Carol Burnett. Both the movie and the book won the Peabody Award for journalism. It concerned Michael Mullins, who was an Iowa man, a young Iowa man who was killed by an American, was it an artillery shell that went off over you guys? But
yes.
You were there, so tell us about that.
Well, it was a very unfortunate incident. It's the kind of thing that unfortunately happens in all wars, and they're happening today, I'm sure. In World War II, I remember reading that they lost about 800 guys practicing for the D-Day invasion when some German U-boat came up and in one fell swoop. So these things, odd things like this happen. My unit was the first of the six of the 198th Light Infantry. Our battalion commander was H. Norman Schwarzkopf, who was a lieutenant colonel at the time.
Later led the troops in the Gulf War.
Right, that guy. And he had gotten a mission from above to move our battalion into the mountains because there was a NVA unit that was operating there expected to attack. And so we had... we had a combat assault into the mountains and climbed up a mountain. We know that they were there. I could smell people that were there know what Nuoc Mam is. It's a Vietnamese fish head sauce, and I could smell it. We all could smell it. We knew they were in the area, but we didn't find them. But what happened is we were sitting on top of a mountain in what they call a night defensive position, and as part of that, it was routine for the artillery officer to play some preset rounds around the rim of the base in case somebody would do an overrun, similar to what you saw in platoon at the end when they had an NDP overrun or night defensive perimeter overrun by VC soldiers, and they're all over the place. Well, this is to prevent that. And unfortunately, we had an excellent RTO. His name was Rockamora. And he was really a good one. It wasn't his mistake. Well, what happened was the fire support base was on the opposite side of the hill from where they were firing these defensive targets. And they fired it about 3 o'clock in the morning, and one came over too low and hit in the trees above one of the platoons. And it killed two right on the spot, wounded about 5 or 6. And immediately there was a termination of the fire mission. And
what did you experience when that round went off over you?
Well, I was asleep at the time. I woke up and I knew something had happened because, you know, everything was sort of ringing. And I started hearing one of the guys whose name was Gary Samuels. They called him the Prince. And the Prince had his leg amputated and was over in one of the holes with his leg partially amputated. And he was screaming, and that's what we could all hear. And so it took a little while, not too long, but just a little while to police everybody up, figure out what had happened, stop the fire mission, and start arranging for helicopter assistance. And the thing about this particular problem is that when the father of Michael Mullins was informed that his son had been killed by friendly fire, he was a retired Army E-8, which is a senior enlisted man, and he just couldn't accept it. Mm-hmm. And the parents commenced congressional investigations. They were trying to interview people in our unit back in Vietnam.
And the conclusion of the book, which you seem to be corroborating, is that it was an honest mistake.
Right. At first, they were afraid that the guns had been misset. They were afraid that the guys on the hill were drinking or something and had shot off a bad round or something.
Did the military, in your view, make things worse? Were they arrogant in the way they dealt with the Mullins and with the brouhaha that happened after that? That was seemed to be the thrust of Brian's book, Friendly Fire, that the military and the U.S. government could have handled this with a little more compassion.
Yeah, I suspect that's true, and I think they probably do a little better job of it now. But you remember they were dealing with a lot of these things all at the same time, and I suspect they just you know, this just didn't get the kind of isolated treatment that it might have really needed. Because, I mean, Brian interviewed General Short, or he was Colonel Schwarzkopf then in the hospital. He was wounded after this in a booby trap accident. And, you know, General I worked with General Schwarzkopf later. He gave me a rear job, and he was a good man. He really was. Mm-hmm. He was not the cause of this problem. It turned out that the people that calculated the trajectory of that round miscalculated in not taking into account the height of the trees.
And that's an honest mistake.
It was an honest mistake. Could happen. And nobody was drunk. Nobody intended it.
John, you've been listening to a lot of stories like this over the last few days.
Last few years. You really feel like, I remember this feeling that we were sort of in the Holy of Holies, if you understand that image of people telling stories that they literally have never told anybody before, not told their family, not even sometimes told their buddies. And as Charlie said, the Vietnam vets came home for the most part alone. They shipped out alone. They were put in a unit. They came home alone. I think everybody here would say we're doing a much better job of reorienting our troops back into the world, is the language that they use. But at that time, and so when we've started this conversation, we've heard such extraordinary stories, and then many of them just for the very first time.
You're listening to a special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, live from UW Green Bay, previewing the LZ Lambeau Welcome Home event for Vietnam veterans. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our phone number, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join in the conversation, let's go to the phones right now. We have Jane from Manitowoc. Jane, you're on Route 51.
Thanks. Good evening. Thank you, gentlemen, first for your service. As a graduate in 1977 from high school and then going into the Army and serving my first active duty tour, I had CIs that were Vietnam veterans. And now, as a county veteran service officer, I work with a lot of you guys. And I want to say thank you for your service, but also for many of you, you came home and those who had problems went to the VA and either weren't treated well or simply the VA didn't know, didn't understand. They had no idea of what PTSD was. They had no idea that the Agent Orange was going to give you so many cancers, Parkinson's disease, diabetes, all those other things that are coming into your generation now. But I also want to let the veterans know that the VA has changed dramatically in the last 20 years. So if you're a Vietnam veteran with health problems or mental health problems, and you have a bad taste in your mouth from the bad treatment years ago, it's different now. Come in and see your county veteran service officer. Let us help you navigate the VA. Thank you again for your service, gentlemen.
And Jane, thanks so much. Charlie, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, Jane, I came back from Vietnam, and I had nothing to do with the VA for a very long period of time. But now I just retired, so I went down just to see what kind of VA benefits were available. And I did see my county veterans service officer, and I had a very good experience. It was amazing how willing they were to help and how much knowledge and information they could provide you. You guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
And John?
Thanks for your call. The CVSOs have been involved in this project from the very beginning. If anybody knows the kind of stories we're hearing, the kind of issues that vets have been dealing with, and also the pride of service, the CVSOs have heard those, and we've been engaged in working with them on this project right from the beginning. We're very happy they're going to be here this week. They're one of the roles that they're playing is to help veterans find people they served with. The CVSOs will have a tent at Lambeau, and vets who are trying to reconnect with people they served with, sometimes people they don't even know the name of. These folks are going to be there to help make those connections.
1-800-780-9742. Jane, thanks so much for the phone call. We've got full phone lines right now. I want to go to Larry from Reidsville. Larry, you're on Route 51. Hello, Larry.
you very much. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate the forum you guys are presenting. My question is, I'm a Vietnam veteran. I was only over for 3 days. Some of my paperwork says that I'm a Vietnam veteran. Others says I'm a Vietnam-era veteran. A lot of people I know, I shouldn't say a lot, there are people I know from the same era that are not classified Vietnam veterans, but Vietnam-era. I don't hear, and I don't seem to be, I don't hear Korean War veterans and Korean War era veterans, World War II veterans, World War II era veterans. How come we are, there is two divisions in the Vietnam soldiers, and why did that happen, and how can we correct it? Because the era are being shunned by the Vietnam veterans.
John Miskowski, you've been dealing with a lot of veterans organizations over the past few years leading up to this event. Do you have any suggestions for Larry?
Larry, we have seen some extraordinary moments with veterans recognizing this tension. We made a decision that this event would be for Vietnam vets, for Vietnam era vets. We understand the sort of tension with those words, but we chose them only because we wanted to broaden the invitation to this. We've seen, what I wanted to say is one of the very first listening sessions we had in Cleveland, Wisconsin, which I discovered where Cleveland was a vet saying...
It's not on the Cuyahoga River.
No, it's not.
Eastern side of Wisconsin.
Yeah, we were at a table and a vet said he was in the Navy and he said, you know, I was in a ship off Vietnam and I don't consider myself a Vietnam vet. And there's a combat vet who looked him in the eye and said, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have food. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have had clean clothes. And one of the vets said, you had clean clothes. I think that's one of the important parts of this event is for folks to get together and have those conversations. We know that those tensions exist. Don Jones, who's our event coordinator, I've heard him talk to, he's stationed in Da Nang, talk to so many vets about how the simple fact of being in uniform at that time made folks subject to the same issues that Vietnam vets had of what was happening in public, of putting it away. The other thing that I want to...
You know, John, this is something that's playing out right now in a political race in Connecticut. There's a candidate for the U.S. Senate who is getting a lot of flack for statements he made that may have blurred the distinction between actually serving in Vietnam and being a Vietnam-era vet, but being one who was stateside.
Well, I think that blurs the issue even further and complicates it for Vietnam vets to see that some people, sort of take this experience and lie about it and play it. We're in a really, really tricky world of lots of issues, and I think the thing that folks should think about this event is that vets and Vietnam-era vets are welcome. You know, we talk to people who, they were Vietnam-era vet. They never left the States, and they'd say, but the loss that they experienced, people that they served with went to Vietnam, their classmates, the issues of that war struck them very profoundly. So we do get caught in some of these names of whether someone was a combat vet or rear echelon, et cetera, but I think that most of the vets really feel this connection.
That brings me back to the original question, and I'm sorry to interrupt, I don't see in any other conflict where there was a distinction between an era and a veteran. And this is the only war we have two distinct different groups representing the same cause.
Larry, we hear you. Thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Are you going to the event this weekend? I think Larry has left us. 1-800-780-9742 is our phone number. I'm Glenn Moberg. You are listening to a special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio previewing the LZ Lambeau Welcome Home event this weekend. And we will be back with more. And Brian from Nina, hang on. We'll be getting to you next right after this short break. We're back at UW Green Bay with a special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. We are previewing the LZ Lambeau event taking place this weekend at Lambeau Field in Green Bay with organizer John Miskowski and Vietnam veterans Thomas Schober and Charlie Lieb. Let's go back to the phones. Brian from Nina, you're on Route 51. Hello, Brian.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I had a friend of the family who was a Vietnam veteran. I'm not myself. I was a kid, 9-10 years old when that was going on. He told me a story one time when we were sitting together at a family function. The subject came up of Vietnam, and he went cold, and he closed up. Well, eventually, he turned to me and he said, "I'm going to tell you this, and it's the last time I'm ever going to say a word. What would you do if you saw a 10-year-old boy come from behind a building with a shotgun?" That was all he said. I knew what he had to do. And I never asked him again. I hope he goes this weekend. I haven't talked to him about that event, but I hope he goes.
Brian, thanks so much for the phone call. There's really not much to add to that. Gentlemen, post-traumatic stress syndrome is something that we've talked about quite a bit. How many vets do you think have suffered from it? Do you think all of you have suffered from it to some extent? I think they have. I know I have. It's taken me a long time to get past it, mainly because with time you realize how you've changed, in the sense that for the first 10 years after I got out of that place, I had trouble going to sleep at night. I couldn't go to bed before about midnight, and I'd get up at about 6:30. And I was having a lot of nightmares, and my wife used to have to wake me up and calm me down, and that over time that went down. I was sick in 1982. I ended up being hospitalized. Yep. I had a couple of operations at the Mayo Clinic for a condition called ulcerative colitis, and I think the combination of a lot of things, and that was stress-related. You're just eating yourself from the inside. I suspect I was. And I felt pretty good since, but that was 82. Fortunately, I had good surgeons over at the Mayo Clinic that operated on me a couple of times. The stories we hear of people with problems going hunting, the sound of gunfire, the sound of helicopters or planes flying overhead, website if they want to find out more. The website is azlambo.org. With event schedule and things like that, and lots of great things going on. But guys, thank you, and Tom and Charlie, thank you so much for your service. Thanks for having us. We enjoyed it, and had people come out and see us this weekend. John Miskowski, Tom Schober, and Charlie Lieb, and Glenn Miller of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Lamb, and our producers, Jane Lutker and Mary Baldwin. Thanks also to Wisconsin Public Radio's Mike Crane and to Patty Moy at our Green Bay studio. Thanks to John Oldenburg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Benny King, Queen's Quarrelle of Avi, Sergeant Barry Sadler, and Peter Polamalu. Remember, the AZ Lambo event takes place tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday at historic Lambo Field. You can find out more at azlambo.org. Next week, Route 51 features our annual gardening show with David Rye of the Jung Seed Company in Stevensport. Thanks to our listeners today. Listen for the first time on WHID 88.1 FM Green Bay, WHDI 91.9 FM, Sister Bay, and WLST 90.3 FM Oshkosh. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we're flying out of town.